Well, that's great to share with these families, to participate in these families. And I too would, just in terms of walking with families, I would highlight the opportunity that some of you can take next week to sit in on that session with Walt Mueller, because that's going to be some great information as you think about dealing with your kids and sexuality. So I'd encourage you to do that. Well, of course, even as we gather today, later today, many of us are going to be watching the Super Bowl. I'm just curious, so how many of us will be cheering for the Eagles? Okay, and for the Patriots? Okay, we can now start a new support group, just a small group. We're going to host it at the Murray's house for who are from Boston. We're going to, okay, no, that's great. By the way, you will be happy to know I'm actually going to be cheering for the Patriots. I am an NFC guy. It's so now, Lord, rain down your judgment upon. We're talking afterwards, Dale. Oh, I just lost my train of thought. Oh, this hurts. I'm not doing this in the next service. So, but here's the deal. I think many of us are going to be watching the Super Bowl today. We're going to be watching with friends, our family. And here's what I want you to notice. If you are in a group of people watching the Super Bowl, like, for instance, we're going to be with our small group. We're going to be watching with some friends. But if you're in a group of people this afternoon, friends and family, watching the Super Bowl, notice there are going to really be two kinds of people there. First of all, they're going to be the people that are really into football or really into the Eagles or the Patriots. So they're going to be watching the game intently. But secondly, there are going to be people there not necessarily really interested in the football, but they're there because they enjoy the group or they're part of the group or they enjoy hanging out with people and enjoy the food, right? So I want you to pay attention to the fact that as you gather, just people watch for a moment and notice you're going to see different types of people. But I want you to also see if this will be the case. Regardless of the diversity of people that will be there, there is one thing that we will all end up watching, and what is that? The commercials, right? We'll be drawn. I mean, there's some amazing. In fact, here's one of my favorite. Remember the little Darth Vader kid? That was a few years ago. That's been one of my favorite Super Bowl commercials. And whether you're into the game or not, there's something about the commercials that will draw you back in, right? There's a break in the action and it kind of draws you back in. So just see if that becomes a phenomenon with the people that you are hanging out with at your Super Bowl party. Now here's why I bring that up. This morning we're continuing our series in the book of Ecclesiastes. So if you've got a Bible, turn with me to Ecclesiastes chapter 5. It's this wisdom book in the Old Testament. If you don't have a Bible with you on a mobile device, there should be a Bible somewhere in the pew rack around you, and I encourage you to pull that out and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 5. Now, over the last few weeks, as we've been going through this book, we've kind of seen this underlying theme that the author is making. He's described as the teacher. And he's making these deep, amazing observations about life. And the underlying idea that he wants us to wrestle with is the idea that life is hebel. And hebel is this Hebrew term that is translated as meaningless, but it really means more than that. What he is communicating is the idea that life is elusive. That is, just the time you think you've got your hands wrapped around it, just the time you think it's actually going just as you planned it eludes your grasp. You can't actually completely control it. Furthermore, the term means that life is short. And so the idea of hebel can communicate the idea that life is like a vapor, like a mist. That, you know, it's here in the morning, but it's gone. And see, the author wants us to see this is the world in which you live. He doesn't sugarcoat it. He doesn't try to hide it. He says, you and I, we live in a world filled with hebel. And not only does he want us to kind of engage that truth, I think he's also challenging us to see that each of us in our own way is trying to make it work. We're trying to figure out how we can live well in this world beyond our control. So even as he's talking about this hebel-filled world, he's challenging us to see, so how am I engaging it? What does it look like for me to live well? And I realize as we've gone through these opening chapters, you know, in different ways the author is dealing with this hebel-filled world. And maybe by this time, if you've been with us all these weeks, you're like, okay, enough already, I get it. But then we come to chapter 5, and it's like a break in the action. And I think in a real sense, just like those commercials are going to draw you back in this afternoon, if you're not into football or if the game becomes uninteresting, they're going to draw you back in a real sense. I think the beginning part of chapter 5, it draws us back in. The author begins to deal with a different topic, and the author draws us back into his conversation by talking about worship. Now, I would argue that he's kind of subtly alluded to this theme of worship, particularly worshiping God, earlier in the book. It will become more pronounced as we get to the end of the book. But now he deals with it front and center. And as the author is kind of looking at his own life and, you know, just the challenge of making life work, and he really does want us to try and, you know, see if we can make life work well, but he struggled with that. But as he's been wrestling with that, it seems that part of what he's coming to understand is this. Central to responding to Hebel well is worship. Central to responding to Hebel well is the worship of God. Now, that may not surprise you. You're like, well, of course, that's what I would expect to hear in my church. Of course, that's what I would expect to read in the book of Ecclesiastes. It's in the Bible. While the topic may surprise you, what may be surprising to you is the way he talks about worship. Because particularly as he talks about worship, he's talking about corporate worship, the gathering, right, of people together to worship. And interestingly, what he's going to show us and what he's going to warn us about is this. If we're not careful, our worship just becomes one more example of Hebel. If we're not careful, our worship can inadvertently become part of the problem. To contextualize this to our situation, in essence, the author is saying, if we're not careful, coming to church can become part of the problem. If we're not careful, participating in the life of a church community can become part of the problem. Now, I realize that may sound surprising, so let's now come to this text and see what the author is saying about worship, particularly how we gather corporately to worship. And as he begins talking about this, I think the first thing he wants us to see is this. He wants us to pay attention to the habits of your life. Pay attention to the habits of your life. Notice how the passage opens in Ecclesiastes chapter 5. He says this, and once again, it's somewhat abruptly because he's changing topics. He says, guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Now, when he says guard your steps, it's not, you know, watch your feet. It's not just make sure you get there the right way. The idea of guard your steps here, particularly in wisdom literature, is the idea of pay attention to the way your life is going. And I think even maybe more specifically than that, pay attention to the habits of your life, the patterns of your life, the way you look at the world, the way you think about the world. And as he talks about that, he says, guard your steps. It's an interesting way to think about coming to church, isn't it? I mean, imagine this. Imagine when you came into this building this morning, imagine you had been greeted by someone at the doors who just looked at you and said, guard your steps. How would you have responded? I actually thought about doing that. I did. I thought, you know, to ask, what if I ask our welcome team members, don't say good morning. Just say, guard your steps. I thought about doing that, but then I was convinced some of you would just turn around and walk right back out. So I'm glad you stayed, so we didn't try that. But just how would you feel if you came into a church and there was no good morning or welcome, we're glad to see you instead, there was just this serious, guard your steps. I mean, we can joke about it somewhat, but the reality is that there's a weightiness to this. There's a warning in these words. There's a wake-up call here. And here's what I think the author is doing. Here's what he's saying. Remember, he's been pointing out how Hebel is a part of life, the Hebel realities of life. And in dealing with those realities, he's saying this. Look, in the course of dealing with the reality of Hebel, you and I, over time, we develop certain patterns, certain habits, certain ways of thinking, certain ways of engaging people, certain ways of looking at our circumstances. And what he is saying is, if we're not careful, those habits, those patterns, those steps that are a part of our lives, they can mess with how we engage God. And if we're not careful, those habits and patterns, ways of thinking, ways of looking at the world, they're shaping how we come into the life of a church. They're shaping how we participate with other people. They're shaping how we engage those people in our Live, Love, Lead group. They're shaping how we walk into this building on a Sunday morning. And so it's pay attention to that. Because if you're not careful, those attitudes, those patterns, those thoughts can complicate how we interact with God. Let me just give you a couple of examples. I think one of the ways we can deal with Hebel is this. In kind of the insecurity of the world in which we live, we can seek to gain security. We can seek to deal with the Hebel by storing up financial resources. Right? If I can just earn enough, if I can just save enough, if I can just plan well enough financially, then I can eliminate the Hebel from my life. I can eliminate, right, the unknown, the risk, and all of that. Now understand me clearly, when you read the book of Ecclesiastes, I think the teacher challenges us to engage life well, to use our gifts and abilities well in the marketplace. In fact, we're going to get to the end of the book, and he talks about the importance of taking risk and not simply getting stuck in the status quo. And undeniably, for some of us, as we pursue life that way, it will build up very generous financial resources. And maybe you're here, and that's your story. And that's not what the author is criticizing when he talks about money in this book, but what he's criticizing is pursuing that and being locked into that in such a way that you believe, if I can just save enough, I can get rid of all the Hebel. I can handle life on my own. So for instance, notice as the passage continues, notice verse 10 where he gives us this example. Whoever loves money never has enough. That's an extremely profound statement. You see what he's saying? He is saying, if ultimately your attempt to control the Hebel and deal with the Hebel is, I'm going to build enough financial security that I control it on my own, you will never have enough. And that may sound crazy, but you know, there's actually contemporary research that backs up exactly what this is saying here. In 2011, Boston College published a research study they had done where they surveyed what they described as the super rich. And of the people that responded to their survey, the average net worth was $78 million. And here's what they discovered. Over half the people who responded to their survey did not feel secure financially. Furthermore, one of the guys who responded to the survey said, I will not feel secure until I have $1 billion in the bank. And the author of Ecclesiastes says, if your approach to Hebel is simply more and more stuff, you will never feel secure. You will never have enough. Now, what happens when I engage God this way? What happens when this is the attitude, right? What happens if this is the attitude that I bring into my church experience? What happens if this is the attitude that is shaping how I come here on a Sunday morning, that this is the attitude that's shaping how I, you know, participate in the life of my church? Well, here's what happens. I think, among other things, I come to church, I participate, but at the deepest core of who I am, my focus, my sense of security is somewhere else. And among other things, it means I'm not generous. It means I won't necessarily be engaging others well because, you know what, I've got my own priorities to deal with, my own goals to think about. And I'm not approaching this experience with the idea of I'm participating in what God is doing, because at the deepest level of who I am, I'm trying to generate that security on my own. So I'm distracted. And you see how that mindset, if I'm not careful, can shape how I engage God. Let me give you a second example. Okay. I was at a conference led by a colleague of mine this week. And during our interaction, he made something that just really struck me, grabbed hold of me, and I'll see if it kind of grabs hold of you. He made this observation. He said, one of the gods and one of the idols of our age is the idol of potential. And here's what he meant by that, right? We live with this sense of, I've got to live up to my potential. I need to be in a situation where I'm living up to my potential. And for those of us who are parents, we push and we challenge. You need to do well in school, get good grades. And, you know, I just want you to live up to your potential. Now, once again, hear me and hear the book of Ecclesiastes. It's not that we aren't supposed to work hard and develop ourselves. And we're going to see that. The author of Ecclesiastes really does push us, right, to grow, to stretch, and to take risks. But here's where potential goes bad. Potential goes bad when I assume if I just develop my potential, then I can make sure life always goes according to my plan. And you know, as my friend was talking about potential this week, it was a bit of a aha moment, because I thought, oh my goodness, I've seen this in my own life. I go back to that season where I was finishing my education, completing a PhD at Cambridge University in England, and in many ways, it was just this great stretching experience. But as I look back on it, there was part of me that was saying, you know what, I'm living up to my potential. And I hate to admit it, but there was a certain level of arrogance as I was completing my degree that said, you know what, look at me. I'm living up to my potential. Because I'm going to have a degree from Cambridge, there's just going to be tons of churches knocking at my door. I mean, how many pastors have a PhD from Cambridge? And everybody's going to want me. I'm going to have all these opportunities because, you know what, I'm living up to my potential. And if you live up to your potential, you're going to have everything open up for you. But, you know, it didn't quite work out that way. And months later, I found myself as a senior pastor in Fargo, North Dakota. Please don't laugh. That was that is nine, believe it or not, nine amazing years of my life. And not only did I find myself in Fargo, we ended up moving in the middle of winter. And I kid you not, it was either the second or third Sunday that I was a senior pastor there. And I got up on a cold morning like this, but it was a little bit colder. And I'm driving to the church, and I pass, you know, one of the old bank signs that has the time and temperature flashing. And it flashed the time, and then it flashed the temperature, and the temperature it flashed was minus 12. And you know, there's just a little part of me, as I think back, it was, excuse me, God, this is not living up to my potential. Right? It's interesting, as you read the rest of chapter 5, the author of Ecclesiastes will say this. He challenges you to work hard, to engage life. But then he also implies we are to receive it as a gift. We're not to live it as something we can always control our gain, but we are to receive it as a gift. And as I look back, that was one of the lessons I had to learn in Fargo. Because in the midst of my frustration that somehow I was not living up to my potential, or this wasn't the plan that I had had, you know, God has kind of a funny sense of humor there. In the midst of that frustration, over time I began discovering this as a gift. The gift of working with like-minded people. The gift of connecting with other families in the same season of life. The gift of seeing our family grow but also get rooted with healthy relationships and begin to take shape and develop identity. And you see, if we're not careful, The mindset of potential can be a very harsh taskmaster, because it will hang over us, causing us always to have a certain sense of insecurity and anxiety. I know I'm in this situation, but what if I were in that? And what if? And if only I had that opportunity, and if only I could be in that situation, if only I could have that job. And so the weight of potential pushes us down and pushes us down, and somehow in the midst of all that, we fail to see life as a gift. And you see, if I'm not careful, it's that thinking that can affect how I engage God and in the challenge and opportunities of worship. I mean, when I think about God, when I pray to God, when I participate in the life of the church, that thinking can create within me the fact that, yes, I'm here, but there's always this low-grade frustration. There's always this low-grade anger. There's always this low-grade insecurity. And it's hard for me to be in this moment because I'm always wondering, what if, what if, what if? And so the teacher says, guard your steps. Pay attention to the attitudes, the habits, the patterns of life that are shaping you as you engage God. I mean, even this morning, what habits, what attitudes shaped you as you came here today? The teacher says, guard your steps. And then he builds on that to say this. Not only does he say, really, pay attention. He says, listen up. I mean, notice how the passage continues. Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know that they do wrong. Do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth, so let your words be few. A dream comes when there are many cares, and many words mark the speech of a fool. Notice again how he opens this part of this section where he says, listen up, go near to listen. Now, if I were to summarize what the author is getting at here, I would summarize it this way. In simple terms, this is a warning against superficial worship. It's this warning, if your life is being unshaped by unhealthy priorities and ways of thinking, and you're not attuned to that, it can lead to unhealthy patterns of worship. It can lead to superficial ways in which you engage God as you come to church, as you participate in the life of a community. It can lead to superficial ways in which you engage God and pursue Him on your own. It can lead to simply going through the motions. So I can read the Bible from time to time, but I do it in a way that I'm not really slowing down to listen. I can pray for meals. I can pray for certain needs, but it feels like I'm just sending a to-do list to God. Right? I can participate in one of the groups in the life of our church, but I don't really see this as a place where I'm actually investing in other people and they're investing in me. I go, but I play it safe. I know how to hide. I come to church, I know how to put on my church persona, I do it easily and naturally. I know the Bible reasonably well, I know the stories, I know the songs we sing, I come, I go home. But I come in such a way that it's not really participating with a sense of engaging God. I just come and it's part of my routine. And eventually the routine becomes second nature. Eventually, I couldn't imagine it any other way. And the teacher says, if we are not careful, we get locked into simply going through the motions. We can't envision that it would be different. And so this teacher, right, he gives us this illustration. It's the person who goes to the temple, who goes through the process of sacrifices. But as this person is going through the process of sacrifices, he's not really thinking through the reality of who God is. It's not really thinking through the reality of who he is before God. It's just you go through the motions. And perhaps he mouths certain words, but he's not really paying attention to what he says. I mean, he's there. He did it. He can check it off the box. But the teacher says, this is the sacrifice of fools. And they become so accustomed to doing it, it's just second nature. They have no idea that it could be any different. They have no idea that they are doing anything wrong. And so the antidote is, what does he say? He says, listen. Don't just go through the moment, just go through the motions. You need to listen. Don't simply get stuck in the routine. Listen up. Go near to listen. As he says that, there's a related passage, I think, in the book of Psalms, in Psalm 46. It says something very similar. Sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but my ears you have opened. Burnt offerings and sin offerings you did not require. One scholar notes that the language the psalmist uses here, kind of for my ears you have opened, kind of communicate the idea of you've kind of had to dig out my ears, right? You've had to dig a channel into my ears. They've become clogged over time and I've gotten used to the routine, so you had to open my ears up. And sometimes that happens, doesn't it, right? Just kind of, we get so accustomed to the routine that it just kind of layers on itself and we get numb to the reality that we are to engage God. This week, Nick Schatz and I, our executive pastor, were at a conference in San Diego on the West Coast. And one afternoon we had some free time. So one of the things we did during our free time was do this. We toured this. This is the latest addition to the U.S. Naval Fleet. This is the USS Omaha. In fact, it's so new, it's been in service less than 24 hours. It was officially commissioned yesterday. This vessel is designed to operate in coastal waters, and it is designed to go very fast. It tops out at over 50 miles per hour. And, as I thought about that, I thought, this is a 400-foot armed jet ski. That's what this is. In fact, it doesn't have propellers. It actually has water jets, just like a jet ski. But to achieve that level of performance, there are certain design features built into the ship. And here's the one that I found most interesting as we toured it. One of the things that was pointed out to us is throughout the interior of the ship, they never use paint. The ship was designed never to be painted on the inside. And here's the reason. Maybe you've experienced this as well, right? In your home, if you've been there a while, over time, you paint and repaint, and what happens? The layers get thicker and thicker. Doesn't make a difference to you, but in a ship, what that means, it can add weight. And I realize you may think that, that's not really that significant, but in a ship of this size, it really could be. And the engineers who designed this ship discovered that over time, if we allowed paint to be used and then repainted and repainted over time, we would eventually add over 2,000 pounds of unnecessary weight to the ship. So they designed it in a way that would never be an issue. And as I heard that described by our guide and I thought about the layering on layering of paint, I thought about this passage in Psalms that's linked to Ecclesiastes and just the idea in our ears, over time, it kind of just like the wax builds up and we just become dull. Become weighted down and we don't even know it. We fall into the routines and we don't even realize there could be something different. We don't realize how some of our thinking patterns can lull us into superficial worship, simply going through the motions. So the author says, listen up. Make room to actually engage God in your worship. So what does this look like? Well, I think it looks like it's slowing down. This is what I've noticed in my own life. I mean, it's one thing for me to read the Bible. It's another thing to slow down just so that there's time to engage God. And one of the things I see in my own life when I'm slowing down, I'm just paying attention. And true love pays attention. Paying attention to how God is described in the pages of Scripture, seeking to listen to him in the context of his word. And as that happens, one of the things I've noticed, I begin to pay attention to who God is and what he's doing. And one of the signs that I'm slowing down is at times I'm just convicted or challenged by what I read. And there have to be moments of confession because I'm I'm engaging. I'm not just going through the motions. And likewise, I think in my own life, what I've noticed is to come to church and not go through the motions, to participate in different activities and groups and not go through the motions, I need a sense of anticipation and opportunity. I mean, just try this next Sunday before you come. Just pray to God, Father, help me be attuned to you this morning. Help me be open to the opportunities you may give me in conversing with other people that are also part of this church. Help me to be in that moment. I found that that's also helpful just as I think about the groups I'm a part of and, you know, just to engage those situations kind of with the openness that, you know, God, you may be at work here in ways I don't fully see or imagine. So help me to be open to that. Help me be attuned to your work in my life so I don't just blow through a conversation where I need to slow down. Now, that's not a guarantee that every Sunday there's going to be this deep aha moment. And when you come to church, that's not a guarantee that if you pray that, there's going to be this amazing conversation in the context of your group. But what it is, it's your willingness to make room in your life for God to be at work, to listen up. And then finally, the author says this, right? Pay attention to how you're thinking. Listen up. Then he says, watch what you say. And the flow of the passage continues. Notice verses 4 and 5. When you make a vow to God, do not delay to fulfill it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It is better not to make a vow than to make one and not fulfill it. And then he concludes this way in this section in verse 7. Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Therefore, fear God. And in different ways, I think what he's saying is you need to watch what you say when you engage God. And the warning really works something like this. You need to, right, pay attention to the thoughts and attitudes that are shaping how you deal with a Hebel-filled world, because if you're not careful, they will cause you to engage God in unhealthy ways. And in different ways, they can lead to superficial worship. And if you're engaged in superficial worship, you're not going to engage God well. Just to give you a couple of examples of what that looks like, think about what we've already talked about. Maybe my attitudes are shaped by kind of a pursuit of stuff, and really I want to control my life by expanding my resources so that I can have triumph over the Hebel that may come my way. But because my life is being shaped by that thinking, when I come and participate and when I engage God, there's a superficiality to it because I sing the songs, I listen, I talk with other people, but at the deepest level, I'm not really open to God being at work in my life because I'm trying to create my security my own way. And as a result, when I talk to him, it becomes routine, it becomes perfunctory, it becomes going through the motions. Or think about that example where we talked about potential. Maybe my life, you know, there's these dreams and visions I have. This is what my life needs to look like. And if I can just live up to my potential, I'm going to be able to shape my life in a particular way. And so I come to church, I engage, but there's a certain sense of anxiety, maybe unsettledness, because I'm never quite sure, am I really living up to it? At times I feel guilty. Maybe I haven't taken advantages of all the opportunities that have come my way, and I just, that insecurity brings a certain superficiality to my worship because I'm not really making space for God to be at work in that. And not surprisingly, then, when I engage God in prayer, it may become transactional because I'm praying in such a way that I may be saying, okay, God, whatever it takes, I'll do whatever it takes if you'll just help me live up to this dream I have for my life. So if you'll do this for me, I'll do this for you. And at some point, we may find ourselves lost in that sense of transaction, frustrated that it's not going according to plan, wondering if God really cares at all. But it all goes back to the fact that I've engaged in a way of worship that's nothing more than Hebel. So instead, the author says, look, Be attuned to the things that are shaping your thoughts and attitudes. Guard your steps. Be aware of that. Be aware in such a way that when you participate in the life of our church, when you come here on a Sunday morning, when you engage God on your own, there's just an openness to who he is, and you're not simply getting stuck and going through the motions. And when you're willing to do that, it's going to open you up to just be honest with God. Not just going through the routine to-do list or, God, please bless this and bless that. But I mean, you're really open to, at times, maybe wrestling with God and praying through things and coming back in confession because you feel the work of his Spirit. And the truth is, in the course of this, what you're actually doing is what the author subscribes here. He says, I want you to fear God. And this way of life is what it looks like. As we read these words, in my mind, it's easy to fast forward to a scene in the New Testament, right? You remember that story of Mary and Martha? Two of Jesus' early followers, Jesus is in their home. And of course, with the ancient world, there are great expectations about hospitality, what it means to be a good host. And Martha is so busy with that, and she's a bit flustered, frustrated that her sister isn't helping out more. And in essence, Jesus looks at her and says, Martha, Martha, you're being consumed by the hebel. One thing is needed. Now, this passage is easily misunderstood. He's not saying, you know what, it's not important to work hard. He's not saying it's not important to be a good host and to pay attention to your guests and just let things flow. That's not what Jesus is saying. But what he is saying is this. The one thing you need is to worship. And in reality, in different ways, that's exactly what the author of Ecclesiastes, I think, is getting at for us. The challenge is simply this. Don't let hebel have the final word. Don't let your participation and engagement in the life of our church just be another form of hebel. But worship. Be open to him. And as you engage this process, then you are truly fearing God and making room for him to be at work. I'm going to lead us in prayer, and then our man is going to continue to lead us in a time of worship. And I just encourage you to be open before God as you sing. And if there are things that you've been wrestling with, even in the course of what we've been talking about, just to bring them to God. Pay attention to what we're singing. So that you really engage. Don't let this just be another moment of routine. Let this be a moment of worship. So, Father, as we've come back to the book of Ecclesiastes, we hit this topic of worship. But in some ways, the author is challenging and waking us up because he warns us if we're not careful, our worship can just be another form of hebel. So, Father, I pray that we would not simply be conform to patterns where we get stuck in the status quo. I pray we wouldn't simply be comfortable with the routine that over time becomes empty and thoughtless and meaningless. I pray that we would come to understand that to engage this world well, we need to engage you in worship. In Jesus' name, amen.